Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
All right, who all out there did something for Earth Day? It was just a few weeks ago now, and if you didn't, no worries. There's always so many ways that we can continue to support the earth and our environment. One of them being supporting a company like Vivo Barefoot, who's always optimizing their processes, optimizing the materials they use and the other companies that they partner with. They just recently partnered with One Earth in honor of Earth Day. One Earth is a company that raises funds and supports causes all over the world that are always trying to improve the environment and overall improve our impact as humans on the earth. They have a sick new Primus light that is a bright green color in honor of Earth Day that they did in collaboration with One Earth. So you can go check that out. Go check out the link in the show notes, and you can use code TOB15 to get 15% off and continue supporting our earth and environment through supporting a company like Vivo Barefoot. Also, remember, we still have a giveaway that's going on through the end of the month. It was in honor of our 200th episode. So if you want to support us and celebrate our 200th episode with us, please go leave a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. And if you just screenshot, and if you want to enter the giveaway, you screenshot that review and email it to us at jen@docgenfit.com. And we're giving away year-long memberships to the gen.health platform. So come celebrate our 200th episode with us by leaving us a rating and review. And now let's get into the interview with Sneha.
Up on the podcast next, we have another physical therapist, Dr. Sneha Ghazi, and it's really her passion to improve people's quality of life by decreasing bodily pain and dysfunction. Sound familiar? Now, she was a professional dancer and certified yoga instructor, and her passion for movement really led to the work that she currently does, which is helping hundreds of people overcome pain and improve function. And particularly, some of the things that she really focuses on is performing arts, TMJ, and pelvic health, which is something we're really going to dive into today. She specifically enjoys treating birthing parents with pre and postpartum issues, especially around incontinence, scar adhesions, diastasis recti, and pelvic pain. Dr. Ghazi is a faculty member for the International Academy of Orthopedic Medicine, and she teaches courses related to pelvic health for healthcare practitioners to receive continuing education credits. Now, she's also worked in New Zealand, where she trained under leading specialists in neck and back pain, sports and concussion management, and other orthopedic conditions. And on top of that, she's really giving back to the community by creating a 501c nonprofit organization called Physical Therapy International Services Foundation, or PTIS, where she brings free physical therapy education, services, workshops, and movement classes globally to underserved populations while teaching students in PT doctoral programs across the United States. She also has a podcast called Fit as a Fiddle, where she features over 100 episodes that you can find anywhere you search for podcasts. Sneha, thank you so much for being here with us. We really just appreciate your time. I know you are running around doing, it feels like, a million things. I mean, even just when I was reading the bio that you had with Dom, I mean, I know you're already doing a lot of things, but then just really reading through your bio was like, this woman is crazy busy.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me here today. My favorite part of everything that I do is talking to people. So on any platform. So I'm super excited to be here. And Jen and Dom, thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course. And yeah, when Jen was reading everything to me, I was more so like, how are we going to talk about all this in a podcast? I mean, sometimes I wish we had 3 hours to just like dive into the nitty gritty of everything, because I think you're doing so many amazing things in the world, not just talking to people, but doing plenty of other things. And one of the lines that kind of stuck with me when we were reading through your bio was how you just have such a passion of reaching people through this blend of Eastern and Western styles and how to deliver them this movement art and science in dealing with their pain and movement journeys. Can you talk about just how you like to blend this Eastern Western style and where that even comes from, maybe?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we talk about the East and the West, I think there sometimes can be a lot of controversy around it, especially because a lot of things that were once kind of normal in Eastern science is now becoming more normalized in Western science, which is amazing. Totally. Even simple things like mindfulness and meditation and breath work and things that come from really ancient Eastern cultures are becoming very mainstream now. And so I think that the piece that I take away from my background is that I was raised in a family where classical dancing from India was very, very prevalent. Doing yoga asanas, breath work, pranayama, meditation, and prayer were such a big part of our lives and a part of our healing, actually. Mm. And so I was raised in an environment where it's very normal to like take a moment and just go pray and breathe and move your body. And like seeing like a grandmother or grandfather doing, a Surya Namaskaram or a sun salutation was a very normal thing in my life. And my mother being a dance teacher and, very, very involved in, the science of yoga as well. It really kind of is what brought me into physical therapy in the first place. As a dancer and as somebody who just loves moving, that's what drew me into the space. And then from, all the education that we get as doctors of physical therapy, going through those 3-year programs and all of this continuing education that we do and all of the time that we spend reading literature and understanding our patients and, pain neuroscience and how pain is perceived and just that blend of integrating that mind-body connection has been just really such a great way for me to be able to care for my patients in a way that I don't think that I would have if I had only one piece of those two things. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important and really wonderful that I've been able to have both of these experiences in my life. I think it's made me a stronger clinician. I can keep talking about it, but I think that's just like the little tidbit on how I bring those two sides of the world together in my own life and my own practice.
I mean, I love it. And that's something that, Dom and I try to do. It's hard because it's not always the sexy stuff, slowing down, taking some time to breathe, feeling into your body in certain ways. What are some techniques that you think anyone can really benefit from? Like, is there something that you can give people right now that you think, if you just started implementing this, maybe from like the Eastern more side or the breath practice or something that you give patients that you think could be really supportive?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to my mind is just body awareness. Mm. So I say this to everybody is just stop and close your eyes and just see where your body is in space and just notice where you're holding any pain. And is that really pain or is it pressure or is it discomfort? Analyzing these things in your own brain, because sometimes I'll ask these questions to a patient and, they'll say this really hurts, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, where is the pain? And then, really asking these wonderful questions that we learn as clinicians of what is the quality of the pain? And at the end of the day, I just have discomfort in this area, that it's not actually some kind of pain that I might exhibit or feel in other areas of my body. And then we start to figure out why is there discomfort? Is there a shift that we can make to remove that discomfort or minimize that discomfort? That's just sort of from a postural sense. And as a pelvic floor PT, my biggest thing is pelvic floor muscle awareness. It's hard to kind of explain in a very short kind of a paragraph or even a sentence, but understanding where you're holding your pelvic floor, is there a tightness kind of an issue? Is there a problem being able to engage? Is there a difficulty letting go of your pelvic floor muscles? I kind of compare it to people like lifting up their shoulders and using their upper traps and their levator. That's the best way to give like a good example for anybody really, like sitting in front of a computer with your shoulders hunched up. Could we just let gravity take over a little and let our shoulders come down? It's a similar kind of concept at the pelvic floor. And so I think to answer your question, the primary thing is just become aware of what you're doing with your body as much as you can. And I think that my patients who become actually hyper aware to almost a fault end up actually having one of the best recoveries and the most long lasting and the most revolutionary changes in their bodies in very short periods of time. So it's exciting.
Yeah.
When that happens.
Yeah. And I feel like that can be the real horizon event per se for people when they start to develop any degree of awareness and realize like, oh, wow, this is something that was there. I could have been paying attention to it all this time. And now I have this awareness and understanding, and I can act on it. And it almost really empowers people to start making different decisions based on what they feel. And so you brought up breath and how that can, give people great awareness, and then the pelvic floor and not being sure if you've just been walking around with your pelvic floor shoulders shrugged up to your ears the whole, you know, all day long. Is there a way or a breath practice or something for the pelvic floor specifically that someone could do right now just to be like, okay, are you holding a lot of tightness there, or may you need to develop more tightness there? Or
yeah, so well, I'll start off by saying that when it comes to anything related to the pelvic floor, it's really hard to verbally describe, and some studies really do show that it's really not as effective as giving somebody an internal or external or even observational assessment. That goes with anything. I mean, if we can just sit here and describe in words how to do a basic squat to somebody, the majority of the population would probably, who don't know how to do it at least, would probably get it wrong in some way, shape, or form. So I'd like to say that just to kind of put that out there. But I still think that there's a lot that we can do without, you know, having to do an internal, external, or observational evaluation. And I think the first piece, like you just said, Dom, is to actually start with the breath, because the breath is so connected with the pelvic floor. Anatomically speaking, our diaphragm, which is our biggest breathing muscle, sits almost in kind of like a parallel plane to our pelvic floor muscle. So for listeners who are like, well, what does that even mean? If you kind of understand where you're sitting right now, the parts of your sit bones that are making contact with your seat, if you're sitting, that area, and then from your pubic bone all the way back to your tailbone, is kind of like everything that you would sit on in a bicycle. If you were to like ride a bicycle, that surface area, that diamond shaped surface area, is considered your pelvic floor. And this, it's again, parallel to the diaphragm. So just by taking a nice deep belly breath in and expanding in all sides of the belly, front, back, and side, I kind of give this imagery to patients by saying, think of when you take a breath in, it's like you're pumping helium into your belly, which is a balloon. And the base or the apex of the belly, whichever way you're looking at it, is the pelvic floor, that surface area that sits on a bicycle. And so when you inhale and bring that air into your body, that's like the balloon lengthening and expanding in all directions, 360, and also at that pelvic floor area. And so when that inhale happens, that area lengthens, expands, releases. And so if people want to get another kind of a visual, you can think of your sit bones pulling apart from each other or widening from each other, or your pubic bone and tailbone moving away from each other. You can also just think about if you were to sit on the toilet just to relax, not push or bear down, but just sitting on the toilet to relax. That's sort of the sensation that you would get on a lengthening phase. And so I actually start with that with everyone, because most of the times we're usually in a tightened place. Like, you wouldn't typically start rehabbing or treating somebody by having them do a billion shoulder shrugs, right? If they have neck pain and upper back pain. So similarly, when I'm treating my patients, most of the time, not all of the time, I work on this very simple, taking a nice deep breath in, thinking of that expansion in that area and also all around the abdomen, front, side, and back. And then when you exhale, you just kind of let the air out, like, and you just let it go. You don't try to do anything. I say kind of like deflate the balloon, or just let the air out naturally, or even sigh and let it out. And that's just come back into a neutral plane. So that's, I hope that makes sense. Did that make any sense to you guys? I hope it does.
Oh, it really did. And as you're doing it, I'm like focusing on my breath and feeling that expansion. And what's cool too, and right now I'm sitting on like a, it's almost like a very fancy beanbag. I don't know how to describe it. It's a big little pillow. Poof. It's a big pillow, but it has like, you know, you can kind of compress into it. And so even just having that extra response, I feel like, of what I'm molding into and then using my breath to expand. I mean, it helps to bring that awareness even more. And it's hard, like you said, for people to understand what this is and to gain that awareness without having any context or without any understanding. And I think this is an area of health of our bodies that no one talks about. We all go get back massages. We get neck massages. You're stressed, you get something, you know, you get touched to that area, but we don't ever address what's happening and potential tightnesses that could happen at the pelvic floor. If you have no awareness, if you might be holding a lot of tension, what are some issues that could develop from that tension, tightness, stress that could be happening in the pelvic floor?
Yeah, good question. There could be lots and lots of things that could happen. We see lots of patterns amongst patients, but of course, not every patient who has a tight pelvic floor displays dysfunction, mm-hmm. or vice versa. But I would say largely anytime that anybody has some kind of tightness, I think sometimes it gets confuse with strength. And I like to talk to my patients that tightness is actually not always a strength thing. Tightness is usually a weakness. And the example that I give them is, if you are holding two bags of groceries with 2 gallons of milk in each arm, outstretched in front of you, kind of like for, I don't know, 10 minutes, and then you drop those bags down and try to beat a 5-year-old in an arm wrestle, it's probably not going to work. And the reason for that is that you are tightening your muscles for so long and activating and using them that when you drop the bag and went to actually use it for another reason, it was too fatigued to even activate and kick in. So in a kind of like a parallel analogy, when it comes to the pelvic floor, oftentimes, I mean, I live in New York City. A lot of everyone that I treat is around this New York City, Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn area. We're all pretty high strung people. we have a very shallow breath pattern. And oftentimes my patients have tightness in their pelvic floor. Not always. Sometimes we just see a true weakness and an inability to engage effectively and kind of at the lower rung of the range of motion. But a lot of times I see that they're on the higher end of the range of motion, and there's actually hypertonicity, which is just fancy for tightness, really. And so when I have them actually engage and do a powerful contraction, sometimes they're not able to give me one. And the reason why is because of that same analogy of holding the bags out. So when you cough, sneeze, jump, run, suddenly you're being told your body is demanded something more than just, you know, sitting in a chair. And when you have that pressure in your body where your pelvic floor actually needs to engage against a force, maybe it didn't really do its job. Maybe it was not able to really engage in the right way. And that might sometimes cause something called urinary incontinence, where you leak urine involuntarily while coughing, laughing, sneezing. It's called stress urinary incontinence. So that's one example of how somebody might get confused and say, oh, I have urinary incontinence. I have a weak pelvic floor. But sure, it's weak, but it could actually, the weakness could be caused by a tightness at the pelvic floor and an over-engagement such that when you're, you know, demanded to do an activity that requires more of you and more of your pelvic floor, you're not able to do it. And then in another example of tightness in pelvic floor, another thing that I really see a lot in my practice particularly is dyspareunia, or pain with intercourse. Now, there are lots of reasons why dyspareunia is kind of an umbrella term, which is kind of like lower back pain. There could be a million reasons that somebody has lower back pain. Is it coming from the joint, the facet joint? Is it coming from a disc? Is it muscular? There's so many catecholamina on an end range scenario. There could be so many reasons somebody has lower back pain. So similarly, there could be so many reasons that somebody has pain with penetrative intercourse. But one of the reasons could be because of tightness of the pelvic floor muscles. And so this is a very mechanical thing, actually. The way I describe it to my patients is the pelvic floor needs to have full range of motion, just like your elbow needs to be able to fully flex and your bicep needs to be able to fully contract so you can bring your hands to your face to feed yourself and do your hair and, you know, put on makeup. But you also need to be able to fully extend your elbows and straighten your arms so you can reach for the top cabinet for your ramen noodles or do something else and reach far away and open a door. So similarly, the pelvic floor needs to be able to fully contract and also fully relax and lengthen. The contraction phase is just really for support of all of these organs in your abdominal area, your head, arms, and trunk, your cardiopulmonary system. It's doing a lot to kind of strengthen, hold, and support your body to make you stay continent, both from a, you know, urinary perspective and bowel perspective as well. But we also need lengthening and opening. And that's for the times that things come in or out. So in the female anatomy, that's for example, penetrative intercourse, putting a tampon in, or a GYN exam, or childbirth. All of these things are times where something is coming in or out of the through the pelvic floor muscles. And so there needs to be enough length in those areas. So if there's a tightness, it's literally a mechanical issue of inability to have penetrative intercourse because somebody is not able to stretch and expand. So that those are just two examples. One that's not a more traditional example, and then one that somebody might think of more likely in the field of pelvic floor dysfunction.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I love that you say, you know, having a tight pelvic floor doesn't necessarily mean you have a strong pelvic floor. Often it means the exact opposite, which, you know, we could say about like a tight hamstring. That doesn't mean you have a strong functional hamstring.
Yeah.
It likely means you need to work a lot on your hamstring. So same way there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I loved that analogy that you used because it helps to bring that visual to understand that this doesn't mean a weakness or something that I just have to do Kegels on. Like, I know there's been some videos that go around social media and a lot of people are very shameful and just throw out random demands on women who are weightlifting super heavy weights and maybe they might leak and they have that incontinence happen. People are yelling, just do Kegels. Just get, you know, all these things that we don't really understand. And I think that's what's so incredibly important is having that awareness and understanding. So you said it in such a beautiful way. Now, if someone is having painful intercourse, what are some tools that you can recommend? Is it going back to that breath work and that expansion? Is there something else that they can do?
Yeah, absolutely. So it starts with breath work first, because that breathing and connecting your breath to your pelvic floor is just like the first thing that everybody should be able to learn in order to just understand their pelvic floor health. Just like somebody who's coming with any kind of like spinal musculoskeletal issue, the first thing we want to look at is, are there major postural faults or corrections that we can make small adjustments to improve? That's the same kind of a thing from an orthopedic perspective as to an orthopedic pelvic floor perspective. It's very musculoskeletal how the breath, the diaphragm, and the pelvic floor and the transverse abdominis, the multifidus, and some of these really deep core stabilizing muscles, they work extremely effectively together. And when these kind of areas are worked on initially, it helps set somebody up for success. And all that means is first being able to do what we were talking about before, which is find that inhale and find that lengthening. Now, a lot of people who are listening, or a whole bunch of my patients actually, well, I'll go over this with them for the first time and they'll be like, I have no idea what you're talking about, lady.
Yeah.
I have no idea. This makes no sense to me. And partially that's because of a huge disconnect with the body, but really a societal problem. I think where it's very difficult for us to engage with this part of our body. There's a lot of taboo-ness involved with it. And there's a lot of misconceptions and miscommunication on the internet and all over on social on what it is to do a Kegel or what it is to do a reverse Kegel, why those things would be indicated, just like you mentioned, Jen. So step one, with somebody who has difficulty with penetrative intercourse due to pain or discomfort, is find that breath and find that inhale and find the let go. I always joke with my patients, there's a song that Frou Frou made that says something about the let go and really is all about the let go. So we focus on that and that release and that active expansion. And anybody who's listening who's a physical therapist or orthopedic specialist, that's basically just active range of motion, right? You always, always, always work on a functional active range of motion with a patient before you take them through other things, before you take them through resistance, before you take them to integrating multidimensional planes or anything more complicated. All we have to do is just find a full range of motion. And so for people who have a hypertonic or tightness in their pelvic floor muscles, I can actually physically diagnose this through internal, external, or observation, palpation. And the true reason for this is because they're guarding and lifting up and contracting, aka Kegeling. We work on that let go, that understanding and the awareness of letting go. And sometimes that takes a lot of time. Sometimes it doesn't happen overnight. Sometimes it takes about a week or two of somebody diligently practicing. But when they do, it's like kind of patting your head, rubbing your belly, or whatever, vice versa.
Yeah.
Or learning how to like raise an eyebrow, or learning how to, I don't know if any listen, this is like the best example I give for people. If anybody is sitting down with their feet flat on the floor, try to keep all of your toes on the ground and just try to lift your big toe up without raising any of your little toes. And for the majority of the population, it's going to be a little complicated and all of your toes will want to lift up the first try or two. And it's the same concept. It's not that you don't have that ability to do that unless there's a nerve that's severed or there's some other complication. It's literally just an understanding of connecting a particular part of your body and really being able to integrate this work. So that's step one. And then Once we get that lengthening, that I call it down training, relaxation of the pelvic floor muscles, I work with people on manual therapy, so internal, external, at the pelvic floor, and around, because everything is connected. There could be hypertonicity at the pelvic floor because something else is not doing its job. And this is a beauty of being an orthopedic PT, is that we put on that hat of looking at the entire musculoskeletal system and notice, is some part of the body not working effectively and functional movements? And is that why the pelvic floor is trying to take up the slack and guarding? Is it for some other reason? Is it posture? Is it the way somebody's sitting? There's so many reasons. So treating penetrative intercourse issues, it's really multidimensional. You got to look at the whole body. I start with the breath and the pelvic floor just because that also helps to regulate the nervous system, because this is a hard topic to talk about. And anybody who's ever gone through painful intercourse will know that it's a stressful time. It's not easy. It's hard to talk to anybody about it, let alone a healthcare provider that you don't even know. And so that just helps to get somebody in the mindset and understand pelvic floor awareness, but we really treat and look at the whole thing. And so there's manual therapy, there are exercises and stretches that we can do that's very customized to what the patient needs. Sometimes I work with people using dilators, which are medical grade, these kind of like silicone cones or tubes. And what it does, I call it like the imitation of a foam roller for the pelvic floor. It's really not, but not as intense at all, or doesn't need to be as intense. But just like somebody would roll out their quads, it's a similar concept of using a dilator to stretch the tissues internally. And so if that's indicated, we go through a dilator protocol that's very, very targeted and specific to the patient's needs. And then we progress through their plan of care. And that's sort of how it goes. But I know everybody's a little different, so their plan looks a little different as well.
Yeah.
I really like that example of the feet. And I think that the feet are very similar to the pelvic floor in the way that most people don't think about them until it starts becoming an issue pain-wise or function-wise for you. And then the first time someone tells you to spread your toes, it's like, what the heck are you talking about? Like, I can't do that. And the more that you focus on it, imagine it, will it to happen, maybe use some different toe spacers and manual techniques in between, lo and behold, our toes actually can voluntarily move for us. And very similar with the pelvic floor. So I like how you explain that. And frankly, I like how you educate in a lot of different realms. I know that's something you're really passionate about. And I know based on the nonprofit that you've started, you're very passionate about getting that to places that don't quite have access to that information or access to providers. And I think that a lot of the health discrepancies that we have and the healthcare and provider deserts that we have in our country is a huge issue as far as getting services to people. Can you just talk to us a little bit about what you do within your nonprofit and how that became a thing for you? Why is that a passion for you?
Part of it is really my background. I'm raised in America, but have visited a lot of third world countries in my hometown and my home country in India. And I just know what the state of healthcare is. I've also spent a lot of time in very highly developed countries like New Zealand that have way better medical systems than we do in the United States.
Wow.
And I just recognize and understand the spectrum of care. A lot of it has to do with Most of it has to do with policies in different countries and access. And so the piece that I like, you know, I wanted to work on is just bringing more access and awareness to healthcare. The idea to start the nonprofit actually started even before I became a physical therapist. I was in PT school. I was raised to always give back more than you take. And my parents have a nonprofit organization. They do so much service work, and I was always raised in that environment. So it's a huge, huge value of mine to, you know, even if it's at a cost for you, to make sure that you give back, because there's so many people in this world who don't have the life that you do. And so the idea started in PT school. And then once I was about to graduate, we started to actually kind of formulate this, and it became a 501c3 nonprofit organization shortly after. It's called Physical Therapy International Service Foundation, because the idea in a pre-COVID era was that I would, it's kind of like a Doctors Without Borders idea, where I would take student physical therapists and other PTs around this country, go to other locations and work with the local communities to set up shop, to teach health educational workshops that were relevant on a needs-based assessment for that community in particular, and then do pro bono treatment and have kind of a lot of opportunities to build capacity and train local community members in like old age homes, senior centers, or in homeless shelters or orphanages, or small towns that had, you know, barely a hospital, to improve basic things that I thought could be beneficial to those societies, or that we all thought collectively could be helpful. So we only completed one successful trip, and then we had these wonderful trips in other countries all linked up and ready to go and planned. And then unfortunately, the pandemic hit. So 2020 was supposed to be a big year for international trips, but all of that went into hold. But what was really cool about that was we actually expanded our services beyond what I ever thought it could be, because international trips take time, effort, and money. And because we switched to a virtual kind of model, we actually were able to do dozens of programs a month as opposed to like two or three a year, which was pretty incredible. We developed kind of like four tiers of offerings, and one of them is health education workshops. So we've done so many different kinds. We've done things on pediatric obesity for inner city schools. We've done things on posture. We've done things, how to prevent falls in senior centers and facilities. We've done COVID vaccine workshops, really whatever was needed for a community. We've done pelvic health workshops. And these are for patients specifically. We also do professional advocacy workshops. And these are for students, whether they're in high school or college, to inspire them to enter the profession of physical therapy. And this is actually how Jen and I connected, because we were teaching a group of students in Harlem. And so we wanted to bring in inspirational guests in the physical therapy world to talk to these students and inspire them, because one part of what I wanted to do with the organization is that healthcare itself is not a very diverse field. And so accessibility issues sometimes spur from that lack of diversity. And so in order to do that, we need to reach out to young people and inspire them and say that healthcare is definitely a place, not just to do, you know, one type of profession within healthcare, but that there's actually a huge world. You know, a lot of these students didn't know what speech language therapy was, for example. And, you know, it seems silly to us, but it's real that a lot of people may not just know that they have these options. So that's kind of our second tier. And then our third tier, which is actually our most popular, are movement classes. And so these are just movement classes. They're therapeutic exercises that are customized for any group class setting. So this, the biggest hit that we did was working with WIN NYC, Women in Need, where we were able to, during really like the thick of the pandemic in 2020, in summer 2020, we worked with children in homeless shelters all around New York City. And we had a whole bunch of dozens and dozens of volunteers actually participate in that one program, where they were able to teach these little kids. I mean, some of them were like five and some of them were like, you know, in their teens. But it was just so wonderful to do this service work and see them move their bodies. We've done, you know, kind of like wheelchair yoga like things as well in the past. And then finally, we offer pro bono care, which during the pandemic, we've done very little of. But one exciting branch, which we're actually working on right now and expanding, is providing free pelvic health treatments virtually and hopefully soon in person for individuals who are on Medicaid, who are pregnant or postpartum. And so just biased because I'm a pelvic floor PT, it is a very bougie girl kind of a field. It really is, especially in New York and in Manhattan, because most pelvic health professionals are out of network. And so there's a huge, huge accessibility issue for a field and a part of the body that's already underserved for the general population, let alone people who already have less access to healthcare. So actually, right before we logged onto this podcast, we just got a new referral from one of the doctors that are helping us get in more Medicaid individuals on our list. And so that's a really exciting branch that we're working on. And hopefully anybody who's listening to this, who's maybe a pelvic health PT in Manhattan or Brooklyn, would be interested in volunteering at some point with us. But we're excited to grow that branch. And it's a huge passion of mine. And I'm really excited that we have an awesome team of people working together. And I think the sky's the limit with this. I hope that, you know, I have the energy. I always have the drive and I always have the intention, but I hope I have the energy to keep doing this for the rest of my life, because it's such a huge part of what I want to do in terms of physical therapy in the world today.
It is really so incredible, like so inspiring to hear what you're bringing the world, like not even just Manhattan or New York. You know, you're really trying to touch other people and help in such huge, massive ways. And I think that is such incredible work. So like, really, I can't say enough about it. And at the same time, with you doing all of this that you're doing, it just continues. Like I started with this podcast, how do you get back to you? You know, you're doing so many things. You have your own practice, you're teaching, you're out there doing your nonprofit, you're coming, you know, it's just, you're in so many different realms and go in so many places. What do you do for your body? Have you experienced pain?
Yes, yes. Oh, and don't forget the podcast, which
and the podcast,
Jen has actually
yeah.
been on.
And you were just saying about a new project too. So yeah. I know that there's more in the mix.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not even hitting on it all.
There's a whole production in the background that's about to start.
Right?
That just spurred.
Always.
It's like a light bulb and it's like a fire. You can't stop.
Always in the works.
But yes, to answer your question, Jen, I do have pain. I vulnerably will admit I have lower back pain that flares up. I have a spondylolisthesis, which is a stress fracture of the lower spine. It is not a very, very severe grade that I've ever had to have surgery or anything like that, which is sometimes the case in some individuals. But it's truly from a lack of health education, actually growing up as a dancer. I mean, I did ballet, tap, and jazz growing up. I did basically every single Indian classical dance style that existed. And a big part of my life, I did musical theater. I did gymnastics and a little bit of figure skating here and there. So a huge part of my life has been movement. And I have been hyperextending my spine for a very long time. And so I was actually in PT school and I was riding a bus visiting my parents from Maryland to come back to Manhattan. And I just had this like terrible, I felt a crack in my spine. I was stretching, but I thought the pop was just, you know, a regular back pop, kind of a crack. Mm-hmm. But it was an immediate onset of back pain that I just like have never felt that kind of pain in my life. And I would never wish that upon my arch nemesis. I don't have one, but if I did. And so it took me a little while. I mean, I immediately, you know, sought help from my professors at PT school who were wonderful and guided me. I got treatment from one of them in our Columbia Physical Therapy Clinic, actually, because it's Columbia PT is also an outpatient. The professors also have an outpatient office, which was really helpful. But it was hard. I the doctor that diagnosed me was on one of my podcasts, and it was, I had reconnected with him somehow, like years and years later. And on that episode, I remember being like, you know, Dr. Siddiqui, when you called me, I was like studying for an exam and you had called me, you said, hey, I know I have your MRI, I have your x-ray report, and I have your findings and you have a stress fracture in your back. And I immediately just started crying. Aww. I was like with my friend from PT school, I started bawling my eyes out. And it just, to me, I thought it was like the death of me as a movement being on this planet. And I had to like forever be limited and like not be able to do the things that I loved. You know, he had given me some activity modifications. He told me the prognosis. He said, you'll be fine, but here are the things you need to watch out for. And for me, like I thought my body, up until then, my body was bionic. In my brain, if you asked me to do something, it was like, here you go, let's go do it. And that injury really put a huge, huge, it was a huge impact on my life. But what I will say is that I have a newfound, I at that moment had a newfound empathy for people who have back pain. And, you know, there's always a silver lining, but I swear, you guys, I'm actually so, so, so happy that all of that went down the way that it did, because I have the best ability to treat my patients with acute back pain, and I can understand it. And I fully, fully, fully am on board with their pain and the whole psychosocial aspect of that. And so for me personally, I have to manage this back pain because it is, you know, something that's there. I even like recently, like 2 years ago, I had to get another x-ray of my spine, of my tailbone, actually, because I thought I fractured my tailbone doing some cliff diving. And the doctor came back being like, no, you didn't fracture your tailbone, but you know, you have a spondy, right? I'm like, yeah, I know. But you know, I have my own physical therapy movement. You can call it Pilates, you can call it yoga, you can call it dance, you can call it, it's a routine. And I do it regularly. I incorporate it into all of my, you know, workouts and all of my morning routines and all of my nighttime wind down routines. And it keeps me going. And so anytime a patient asks me, hey, at discharge day, do I have to keep doing these exercises forever? The answer is, do you have to keep brushing your teeth forever? Yeah, you do. That's just the way it is, because you got to maintain your body. If my body is prone to have issues and dysfunction with extension-based movements, I need to work on my flexion control, and I need to be able to have a really strong pelvic girdle, and not just strong, but mobile and flexible as well. Functional is what we're looking for. Mm. And so I think that, yeah, I think having pain is, as a clinician, personally, is actually, I'm very grateful for having this experience, because I don't think I could treat patients if I didn't go through this, and if I don't continue to go through this in the way that I do.
Wow.
And how different of a experience having gratitude for it now compared to when you first had it happen. It mm-hmm. speaks volumes about the journey that you've had. And I think that, I mean, are you back to being able to do many of the things that you were doing before, movement-wise?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I can basically do everything. I mean, I would be just one of those people who would just be standing and then bend backwards into a wheel pose, and that would just be perfectly fine for me. For personally, I just don't find those activities necessary in my life anymore, so I just don't do them. Mm-hmm. I'd rather do, for example, for those of you in, you know, aware of, you know, yoga asanas, I'd rather do an up dog to get an extension based stretch, or even just prop up on my elbows and be kind of like in a cobra pose or sphinx pose to get any amount of extension. I just limit it. But in terms of what I'm able to do in, like, with dancing and running and other kinds of activities, as long as I keep up, I don't slip down. And I know that the second that I'm slipping off of things, my usual dysfunctions creep up. And one of them is actually, full disclosure to the world, I have stress and urge urinary incontinence growing up as a child and into my teenage years. And so the second I start to lose stability and mobility in my lumbopelvic girdle around my lower back and around my pelvis and my hips, I will immediately start experiencing symptoms of urinary incontinence and lower back pain. And that's just those two things that happen for me personally. And so I know the second that I kind of sneeze and there's a little leak and my back kind of hurts, I'm like, stay out, you gotta get back on track. I know you just got back from vacation, but get back on track.
Yeah.
So it's just a good cue for me.
I mean, thank you so much, first of all, for being open enough to be vulnerable and share all of that, especially as a PT. We're seen as, well, you're the movement expert and you tell us how to get out of pain, so you shouldn't have any pain. And we have this idea, I think, as a society that, you know, we live this pain-free life. And the reality is we live with pain and movement, and that's okay. We can live in the both, and we can manage the pain through movement. And it's so beautiful to hear you say, as long as I maintain my practice, my movement, the things that I know that help me, it is a lifelong journey that you're going to be in. I think we need to hear that over and over and over again to really be able to fully understand it. So thank you so, so much for sharing that.
Of course. My pleasure.
So if somebody's interested in learning more from you, if they're in your area, and because correct me if I'm wrong, you do visits and virtual visits in New York, Maryland, and New Jersey, is it?
That's right. So I'm based in New York. I live in Manhattan. I do travel to basically all of the boroughs, not Staten Island, but I travel to Queens, Brooklyn, and the Bronx. Most of my patients are in Manhattan and Brooklyn, though, and I do all in-home visits for them or telehealth virtual visits. I do have some patients in Hoboken, Jersey City area that I travel to in person, which are pretty much like the outskirts of Manhattan. But anybody who's outside of that and in Maryland is my home state, so sometimes I go visit and I have patients there as well. But most of the times when it's out of the greater New York area, I do virtual consults. It's you know, you guys probably have done a whole bunch too over the pandemic, and it's not the most ideal thing, especially as a pelvic health practitioner, but I have discharged and, evaluated and discharged patients through telehealth only, and it works. It's better than nothing. So yeah, that's sort of my practice. But to get access to all of that information, it's my first name. So SNEHA, physicaltherapyspelledout.com. So all of that information is on there. Like we said before, I have a podcast. It's called Fit as a Fiddle. Jen was actually actually on it just a couple weeks ago in our last season, which was super fun. And our nonprofit organization is Physical Therapy International Service Foundation. So people can go onto my website. There's information about it there as well. But yeah,
that's amazing. Pretty much
all the stuff. And we will have all that linked up down in the show notes. If anyone's interested in getting involved, listen to the podcast, anything, go check that all out. And Sneha, thank you so much for doing what you're doing, getting information out to the world, and being here for a little while to share things with us.
Of course. And you guys too, equally, you know, really looking up to you guys as leaders in our profession as well forever to collaborate with and, you know, see you guys do some great progress in our field and push the needle forward and making physical therapy, you know, as accessible and as, you know, I guess in a way, just second nature to everybody as opposed to something that's so big and daunting. And I think all of the stuff that you guys do on Instagram just makes it so much easier for people to understand these concepts of movement in such a nice way. So thank you for your space. Thank you for having me on the show too.
Of course. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for those sweet words.
Loved having that conversation with Dr. Ghazi. We always love having PTs on to be able to talk about what they're doing in the world and in the area of physical therapy. If you haven't gotten a chance yet, please go check out the Gen.Health platform. We actually have a core plan that will help you learn all about your core and how to do some of the activations that we talk about for your pelvic floor, because that is a huge part of the core. And remember, we're having a giveaway right now. So if you haven't yet left a review for the podcast, please go leave one on your favorite podcasting platform. Take a screenshot of it and email it to jen@docgenfit.com. And you'll be entered in to potentially win a free year access to the Gen.Health platform. So go try out one of the core plans and make sure you get entered to potentially win free access for the entire year. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Optimal Body Podcast.